The other thing I want to give to you is
it's really an hourglass. Every problem is a problem of the heart. So you're going to run into problems with teenagers. Just forewarning, hello, Earth to parents here. When you run into a problem with a teenager, there's a couple different responses we can take. We can gloss over it, we can minimize it, or we can deal with it biblically. When your kid's 14, 15, 16 years old, you're obviously not picking them up, taking them to the back bedroom and dealing with it that way. At least I don't recommend to deal with it that way at that age. It talks about correcting with the rod betimes, which means often and early. But certainly you're going to have to deal with problems. And when you deal with problems, there's always a situation. You always got to gather the facts, which is what you have in front of you tonight. You have emotions that come with that problem situation. So here comes my daughter home from a youth activity, and she was left out of something. Two other girls got together, and my daughter felt left out. And she comes home, and she's crying, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy, they don't like me." Okay. Yeah, they do, just not today. But there's problem situation, there's emotions, there's behavior, there's thinking, there's heart. So all of those things come from the heart. Helping your kid to see their own heart in the midst of the problem is very, very important. What does God think coming out of that? What does something need to be repented of and forsaken? In this situation, if my daughter's dealing with a hurt, how would God want me to think about that hurt? How does God want me to respond to that hurt? What action will honor God if I play retaliation? If you're not going to be my friend, I'm not going to be your friend. Okay? And notice this hourglass is in the form of questions. So when you're working with a teenager through something, it's good to ask questions. It's not good to just come down like gangbusters every time and accuse. Questions open up conversation. Accusations close up conversation. Okay? So when you're working with one of your young people and they cheated on the test, what caused you to cheat on the test? Well, I didn't want to disappoint you, Mom. I didn't want to get a bad grade. So here's a little phrase you may want to write down with your kids. Disappointment is always better than dishonesty. Like, kids always tell me the truth. Because dishonesty is going to kill me. Dishonesty is going to ruin our relationship. It's going to leave me hanging with, I don't know if you're ever telling me the truth, right? And so, but they're expressing when they're talking through that. And that's not, it's not a time to go, "I just can't believe you lied to me." Well, that statement's not going to help anything in their heart. What we need to do is help their heart see truth, what the Bible says about truth, and understand, hey, let's learn from this, and moving forward, let's remember the next time I'm tempted to do something because I don't want to disappoint somebody, or I don't want Mom and Dad to find out because I'm afraid of what they'll do to me. Disappointment trumps dishonesty. And you might take them to Proverbs chapter 3. "Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thy heart. So shalt thou find favor in the sight of God and men." When I'm dealing with somebody with truth, you know, they got to understand, ultimately, you're not going to have favor with anybody if you're a liar. You're just not. You're not going to have good relationships because trust is the foundation of relationships. Can I give you this? Teens get good at lying. I hate to say that, but that is the reality. Worked with teens for 10 years here, and whenever a teenager told me something in the back of my mind, I said, I don't know if I got the full truth there. I better just dig in a little bit more. So get to the heart of the problem here. Get to the heart, and then part of their
failure, their sin, their needs here, is to teach them what the godly response is. And notice at the bottom of the hour chart, it's to also give them that emotional stability. When I have a godly response, I have emotional stability. When I have an ungodly response, my emotions are unstable. I'm yielding to my emotions rather than yielding to biblical truth and letting my emotions follow. And there's a drastically different, there's a different ending at 10 than there is up at 1. If I take 10, then I, if I take 7 through 10, then I get a result that pleases God and I can minister to others. And so there's just a little helpful chart there, that I thought, would be helpful in discerning your children. And, you know, when I deal with young people, sometimes I deal with them in my office with parents. Something big goes down, right? Mom and Dad didn't know about it, and now Mom and Dad don't know what to do about it. Like, this just completely caught us off guard, okay? It is not the time. All right. If that happens, there's already a fire, right? We don't want to put any more wood on the fire. We want to handle the situation biblically. We want to show where there's wrong. But we don't need to raise the roof on it. We don't need to just go ballistic. We need to help them to see, where do they go from here? Because what I tell you, teens are going to have what? Trouble. At some point, they're going to have trouble. Hey, none of us raised in perfect kids here. In fact, I just had a father call me on a reference of one of our college students. Their son's interested in, or daughter, I can't remember which one it was called. And they said, "Well, any baggage?" And I said, "All young people have baggage. All young people have baggage. All of us have baggage." So, now, obviously we want to minimize. Obviously we want to try to preserve them from as many scars as possible. So I'm not just saying throw in the towel. I am saying how we handle it. We need to go to the heart of the matter. Sometimes we're lurching at the symptoms, and there are heart things that produce the things I believe are sensing. I just dealt with somebody the other day in counseling, and they had some setbacks. And I said, "Okay," I said, "we've looked at what are the lies that the devil sells you before you give in to the temptation. Now help me with what are the lies afterwards." And this particular individual was very open, very honest, tears coming down this person's cheeks, and gave me 5 things that she believed right afterwards. This, and this. And they were all right from the heart. But they were lies that were believed afterwards. So you have to understand, when your kid sins, when your kid gets into something, that's not the end of it. They believed lies to get there, but you have to understand there are lies coming afterwards. Such as, "Well, I might as well do it all the time. I just did it again." Such as deep as, "Life's not worth living." Such as, "I'm bitter because what happened that Mom or Dad went and told somebody about." So you got the devil working overtime on both fronts. The beginning, leading into a temptation, and coming out of a failure. And so there's some things there in the heart chart that will help you. I'm going to give you a handout on 7 through 9. These things, I call it parenting on purpose. Sometimes we think they get past 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade. And guess what? They can do more, and I can let them go more. And while there is a releasing, let me say this, I've said this for teens for years. Teenagers are in need of overtime, not less time. Okay? I don't mean overtime from the standpoint of watching every little thing they do, and, you know, though there still needs to be supervision. But overtime in talk time, and more importantly, listen time. Lots of listen time. That's very important. Here we have some terrible passages about children. Verse 14 of 2 Peter chapter 2, cursed children. Proverbs 30, there's a generation that curseth his father, doth not bless their mother. And you know people that have children like that. I guarantee you live long in life, long enough, you know people that have children like that. There's a generation that are pure in their own eyes, yet is not washed from their filthiness. I talked to the young lady at the Red Lion Fire Department the other day and found out she was LGBTQ. And she said, I just like to date other girls. I don't know how to tell you that. And basically the whole fire department's for the strike brunch because she's gay and they're all for her. They all want to support her. You know, she'd been honest. She didn't want to be, she didn't see it as filthy. Like I told her, I said, well, it's sin against God. I said, Jesus came to die for your sin and came to die for my sin. And by the way, I'm on the same plane that you are on. I'm a sinner. But on the other hand, you have to understand, he also came to name sin. And that lifestyle is sin against God. But Jesus came to deliver you. But she's pure in her own eyes. Like, she doesn't see anything wrong with it. We have those generations that we're dealing with today. How lofty are their eyelids? And their eyelids are lifted up. Can't talk to them. Can't get anything through to them. Unteachable. A generation whose teeth are swords, their jaw teeth as knives to devour the poor off the earth and the needy from among men. Deuteronomy 32, verse 20, a froward generation, children in whom is no faith. What a horrible testimony of reputation. Generation, Judges 2:10, which knew not the Lord. And then a number of good verses here, that he might seek a godly seed in Malachi 2:15. Which, by the way, if you study that passage, your marriage is going to dictate a lot about your seed. So in Malachi chapter 2, therefore take heed to yourself, to your spirit, that you deal not treacherously against the wife of thy youth. Right out of that he might seek a godly seed. Boy, we get married, we want a godly seed, but what affects that in a big way is how we treat one another. Take heed to your spirit that you don't deal treacherously with each other, because that's going to blow a hole in your kids' lives. And so there's a generation that seek him, thank God. In Psalm 24, verse 6, I wrote three things down here at the bottom. Parenting with the purpose of godliness requires time used on purpose. Parenting with the purpose of godliness requires time used on purpose. Number two, parenting with the purpose of godliness requires training done on purpose. And parenting without purpose results in tragedies and statistics. There's some principles to teach and some patterns to develop at this age. I have found in working with young people, even my own, over the years, that somewhere around junior high, if they got saved when they were young, sometimes they go through this torturous phase of doubting their salvation. That does not make them bad. You understand there's a lot of things that can contribute to that. Some is just the changes of that time of life for them. Bodily changes, emotional changes, awkwardness. They're beginning to analyze more. So if one of your kids is analytical, boy, they could be looking at their salvation from every different angle. Did I really mean it? Did I say the right words? You know, they go down these roads. I say it's good to teach on those things with them. And if that comes to the surface, if they're having trouble with that, that's not a bad thing. One of the things you want to find out, one of the things I try to help them with, my daughter Alyssa went through this, pretty rough. But when are you having doubts? Are you having doubts when you sin? Are you having doubts under preaching? Are you having doubts, just random doubts before you go to bed? Because if the Holy Spirit is wanting to draw somebody to genuine salvation, what will he use to reprove them? The Word, right? So if they're under preaching and they're getting consistent, man, I don't know if I'm saved. That's something to look into. Are they getting doubts when they sin? Because the Bible says if sometimes we condemn ourselves and we don't have confidence towards God. So if I'm sinning, it will make me feel like I'm not saved, right? That's true for all of us. So then I can help them with that. So you want to find out when are the doubts coming.
that's going to be a big piece of that puzzle. Then I encourage you to work through 1 John with your kids and look at the evidences of salvation. Teach them how to identify it. And then ask the Spirit of God to confirm or bear witness that they are a child of God, or to convict them that they are not, based upon the book of 1 John. Why? Because if the book gives them assurance and the Spirit gives them assurance, that'll nail it, I promise you. If I give them assurance, well, Johnny, you know, at 4 years old, don't you remember praying? Whoa, I don't want to give them assurance. At this age, you know, at 4 years old or 5 years old, I might remind him of his yearly anniversary of when he got saved. We did that with our kids. But if he's struggling with doubt, I don't want to guarantee him salvation. If he's junior high, boy, it's time for him to be able to hear the Spirit of God. And that. So, we want to deal with that. We want to deal with character politics. We want to deal with godly music. I will just tell you, you better guard the music area viciously. If you don't, that slope is so slippery. Your kids will be off the charts. And I will tell you, if they get into Christian contemporary music, country, you can kiss their spiritual desires goodbye. They'll be gone. They will not have them. You can't mix world in that area and it not affect their mind and their morals and their heart. Guard godly music. Guard it, guard it, guard it. My kids were not allowed to use headphones. My kids, they got MP3 players from me as a teenager, and we put all the music on them. I wanted their ears so tuned that they could pick up something wrong because they never heard wrong. All they heard was right. There's not my phone, but we use Spotify today for our music, and there's all kinds of godly stuff there. Plenty of it. Like, I've got 1,200 songs, okay, that I can listen to. So it's not like, well, if I don't have godly music, so I'm going to be, no, there's tons of it. But you better guard that. You better guard that. We're talking about influences. We're talking about where you want them to be in 10 years from now. And if music gets off as a teenager, it is a very, very, very hard area to get back under control, especially with all the outlets today. So personal appearance, you want to deal with that. You want to model right on that. You want to teach right on that. You want to help them. No, there's just going to be struggles there. There's going to be wanting to look like others. There's going to be fashions and all that. You're going to have to talk through that and work through that with them. And be patient. Be teachable. Me and my girls just read, a year and a half ago, we read a book together on modesty. And I let them ask questions. We read another book as a family on appearance. Reading together is good because it brings things out that you can discuss rather than them just hearing somebody preach, right? And so we've got to work with that. Guys, I didn't have to used to say this, but boy, they need to know what masculinity is. Like, they need to know that. Manners, excellent speech, work ethic, obviously, showing initiative, looking at role of man, role of woman in the home. That's probably modern in most of your homes, so, but it's getting mixed up out there today. Faithfulness to church, obviously, is a big one. Abiding in Christ, what I preached on Sunday night, is the core. It is the core, I'm telling you. I can tell you. Tabitha can testify to this too. We sit in team time, and we'd have small groups, and we've had devotions. And we give them all journals, and we teach them all how to use it, and try to help them. And we just ask them to come and share one thing from the week. Talking juniors and seniors in high school, ninth graders in high school, one thing. And I'll tell you, the ones that came up empty every week today, I'll tell you where they're at. They're not here. They are not only not here, they are living sold out to the flesh. And I could have predicted it when they were in 9th, 10th grade. They're not going to make it. They're not going to stay in the faith because there was no abiding, like no interest, like no teaching, like nothing in the home that was dealing with that. And it was sad to watch. I'd have parent meetings. We talked just like this. Just just work with your kids in this. Work with your kids in this. Get on the floor and read the scriptures with them. Ask them how their devotions do it. Establish devotions in your homeschooling routine to start out the day. Have family devotions at night. Just do some simple things. And they never learn how to abide in Christ. And so, let's learn from others. Discernment of friends is a big one. Discernment of friends. Work through Proverbs on that together. We did a whole study in Proverbs, and every chapter we looked at friendships. What a fool looks like, what a scorner looks like. In fact, my daughter just did a whole study on this because she's stepping into that time where maybe God's going to bring a guy into her life. And I said, you better know what a scorner is. You better know what a fool is. You better know what an angry man looks like. You better know what a wise man looks like. You better know a prudent man. You better no. She goes, Dad, look what I did. Here's my chart. I said, good. I said, that will help you. It will help you in discerning. Discern our friends. Be a usable vessel. Preparation for ministry. This doesn't mean full-time ministry necessarily, but learning to put yourself in a place of availability, being willing to be used. I think it was Connor that came up to me recently about the nursing home ministry and said, Pastor, I'd like to be involved in the nursing home ministry. You know, if they want to, man, do everything you can. I know sometimes there's limitations because of schedules and things, but do everything you can to help that go forward, that they feel used by God, that they want to be used by God. Personal witnessing, once they get to a junior here, I definitely would encourage them in the church soul winning training with Brother Peters. All of our kids went through that. It's a blessing to all of them. Servant spirit is a big one. Just carrying a servant spirit. Teenagers, you're going to have trouble. And number two, they're going to be selfish. It is humankind to be selfish. And so to keep that going in them, that servant spirit. And I would watch it drift. Like, my kids, boy, we're getting away from that. We've got to pull it back. Boy, I need to shut down more my time and give more others' time. They need more time on others. They're getting too much time on themselves. That's killing my servant spirit in them. Got to be able to pick those things up. Courtship, there needs to be a plan. It needs to be talked about. It should start to be talked about at 12, 13, 14 years old. It should start to be talked about. At 16, I took my girls out for their birthday. I gave them a purity ring. We talked through what that is emotionally, what that is visually, what that is bodily. Asked them to make that commitment to the Lord. Preachers ought to say these things, but I believe the home is where it's at, man. It's not at the preacher's level, although we ought to. And, you know, you get them to camps and things, they're going to hear some strong preaching on that. But what's the path? How's it going to work? You know, Daddy, what if I like somebody? Well, good. That'd be a good thing that you like somebody, okay? But what happens then from there? We have a process that we use. Others might tweak things a little bit. My son spent 5 months in the process once he let us know he liked somebody. It was 5 months of process before he went and talked to the father and said, hey, I'm interested in courting your daughter. If you allow me to court your daughter, I want you to know this is the process that I've been through. You don't start talking about that at 19 when they already like somebody, because you're in reaction mode. Now I got to do something. You start talking about that at 13 and 14 and 15. Introduce a little bit at a time and a little bit at a time, and you talk a little bit more about it and a little bit more about it. Not all the time, because you don't want to be stirring their desires too fast, but you want to be building towards that time that it's supposed to happen, that time of life that, you know, they're prepared at this point, you know. At 15, they're not ready for all that stuff. There may have been 15-year-olds back in the 30s that were, but our 15-year-olds today are not ready for these responsibilities. Authority is another big one. I'm just giving you some topics here to really think through. There's a good book in the bookstore on authority, and I'll give you a book list recommendation for teenagers tonight before I leave. Remind me. Money management's a big thing. The Lord's Day is a big thing. One of the things, here's another just tendency in teenagers, they get apathetic. And I can't stand that. When I was youth pastor, be all in. Be all in or be all out. But are you going? If you go, I might go. Like this happens all the time, right?
So I had a couple teenagers in the youth group over the 10 years that I was in the youth group that were gung-ho. Like, they were just rally criers. You're gone. And Alyssa was like that. Alyssa was like, she was always, you're gone. You're going. Come on. You're going with us. Be all in. Know that you're going to fight apathy. And teach them this, whether it's a homeschool activity, whether it's a church activity, whether it's a family activity. I don't go for me. Well, I don't like this activity. I don't care if you like the activity. I'm going for the group. We're going for the group. Not every activity that I find as a youth pastor that I like either. But you know what? We go for the group. A lot less thinking about yourself. A lot more thinking about others. How can I be a blessing to somebody at the activity? Not do I like it or don't like it. Man, if they look it through those eyes through all the church functions, someday they'll say, well, I don't, you know, I'm not interested in Pastor Sears right now. I think I'll just step out for 6 weeks. And, you know. Those things. Basic homemaking things there we want to be training our young ladies on. You cannot believe the number of men and women that have come to me in counseling and neither one of them know how to cook. I'm serious. It blows my brain.
I didn't know how to cook at all when I got married.
Yeah.
Because I was on the farm. I had to help my dad.
Yep.
I had no kitchen.
So somebody needs to know. Somebody needs to know, premarital, who cooked in your house? Do you, any of you have background in cooking? Because it's getting expensive to eat out, right?
Yeah.
So learn basic life skills. There's some things there. Reading, give them purposeful reading, not just what they want to read or what their interest is. All my kids had interest, but I couldn't just leave it to that. I needed to push the envelope on it sometimes. And summer is a good time. School year is kind of hard because they got a lot on their plates, but summer is a good time to put good things in their hands. Christian biographies are great for them to read. Christian biographies, load them up on Christian biographies. Begin reading books as part of family devotions when they're teenagers is when we started that, junior high. Be careful squashing something good that they're interested in, but by all means, don't also let them develop so strong of an appetite in something that is not going to be fruitful down the road. So, I'll give you an illustration. My son had an opportunity to be part of emergency training group for young men. And I called my dad and I said, Dad, what do you think? I said, he's got this opportunity and I think it'd be good for him to get some emergency training. And he said, son, do what you want. But the more he gets tied down on those things, the less open he's going to be for maybe what the Lord wants him. He said, I probably would not feed it too strong. I charted that. I was like, that's wisdom. And from that point on, I was like, okay, he can be involved in things, but I want to be careful how much he gets into it, because that appetite could turn into something that keeps him from preparing for life better someday, or, you know, something like that, all right? Relationships, teach them to treat everybody the same way. Show friendliness to everyone. Teach them discretion, appropriateness in different settings. One of the things, again, working with teenagers, they have a hard time understanding serious moments from funny moments. Junior highers especially are kind of awkward, you know. Sometimes they're a little out of place, but as they grow older, they need to understand appropriateness. That's a key word for them as part of their maturity. Teach on how to treat siblings and mother. Young men can become disrespectful and unresponsive to mothers. Boy, I can't remember if it was 8th or 9th grade. Something came out of my son's mouth towards my wife, and my hair went up. I didn't hear what I just thought I heard, did I? It only happened once. If your son is starting to treat you that way, you need to have a talk with your husband. And that needs to be put to a stop, a hard stop, real quick. I watch young men treat their mothers horrible, just horrible, because they're becoming a man, I'm independent, yada, 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 you have no more. They didn't say it this way, there's no more authority, but they were acting that way. No, I'm sorry, as long as you're in your home, your mother, my wife, has the same authority that I do. Thank you very much. Now shut your mouth and listen to your mother. There's pillars here. I'll give you these and we'll be done. You can read the other things. I say pillars, so what I want you to do is I want you to look ahead. I want you to look ahead about 10 years. If they're 11, 12, let's go to 7, 8 years. They're 19, 20 now. 19, 20, they're not growing up in your homeschool. They're not waking up and having breakfast with you every day. And you're not making every decision for their life. They're out of there. They might still come home and live in the roof, but they're working a job. What are you going to depend upon at that age? And now they're going to make the biggest decisions of their lives. And it ain't going to be, Jocelyn, let me tell you what you need to do. Brandon, you're getting ready to pick a ministry. Let me tell you what you need to do. This is where you need to go. No, I'm sorry. I'm out of that lead now. So what am I? They're at college. They're going to hack, taking classes. They're learning a trade from somebody on a job. What are you going to be leaning on then? Number one, you better have a developed prayer life for your kids. And you might as well not wait till they're 19. You might as well start that now. You better start praying for specifics. Better start praying for friends. Better start praying for that special one. Better start praying. Lord, just keep speaking to their heart. God, keep them awake spiritually. Lord, keep breathing spiritual life to them. God, protect their mind. Protect their eyes. You better start praying. You're going to lean on a prayer life is what you're going to lean on. Number two, you're going to lean on training. You only get one shot at this. You're not going to start training at 19 and 20. Say, oh, I forgot about that. Let me get that to you. No, training's now. Now. We got training focus from me in an earlier session, institute. Number three, you got to get this to them. And I think we started it at about 14. We had a family devotions, and I said, kids, tonight we're going to do something new. You're going to open your Bibles, and you're going to think about three people in the church whom you love and who love you that you would be willing to go to and ask their counsel about something. What, Dad? Yeah, three people that you're going to go to and you're going to seek counsel. These are people that you believe love God, they love your church, and they love you. Do you think Miss Connie would be one? Good choice. Do you think Papa might be one? Good choice. So, my son just interviewed last night, and he just told the pastor that he's interviewing with, and he needs some time to work through a process to know the will of God, and one of the things that I'm going to do is seek counsel. That makes me feel a little bit more comfortable about his decision, if he's building into the principle of counsel. When he was interested in Valerie, hey, before you get your heart too far down that road, why don't you seek counsel from three people that she knows that know her? Good point, Dad. Yeah. Okay. So what did he do? He went to three people and he sought counsel. What are you going to depend on 7, 8 years from now? You better build it in now. They better get their Bibles out and they better write some names down. And those names may change. They may tweak. But seek counsel. Because guess what? There's got to come a day. I'm just telling you where I'm at. Okay? There's got to come a day where it ain't all going to come from you. You're going to need somebody else speaking into their hearts. Right? Helping them through these decisions. Seek counsel. Number four. The selection of friends. Remember, they will make friends with who they are. Ultimately. So who their heart is, that's the friends they're going to make. If they have a pattern of making wrong friends now, be careful. I'd be praying that off. I'd be praying my bones off on friendships. Talk. Communicate. Be interested in their interests now. it may not be an interest to you, but because it's an interest to them, be interested so that when they're at 1920 and they want to talk about Jimbo, that's so huge and what a hunk of a man, and I think I love him, Mom, that she's talking to Mom about it. She's talking to you about it. And she's not talking to a friend with no parental input, no parental communication. This happens all over the place. There are relationships happening and Mom and Dad's are completely left out. I think one of the biggest things my son did to honor us was 2 weeks ago when he got engaged. He included both sets of parents in the whole thing, all the way through, with a surprise. And it was thrilling and fun for everybody. They honored, right? That's the Lord. That's not me. But I'm saying this. If you communicate a lot now, you have hope of them communicating with you during the big stuff. Commitment to a Bible-believing church, you know. Hopefully they're committed, man. They're not going to all land around here. Mine are. Mine are going to be used by God in other areas. I just have that gut. Well, hopefully they know what it means. They're going to look for a church wherever they go. They're going to find a good Bible-believing church to be. Because if they get outside the church, oh my. We're headed real downhill fast. The development of reading, that's important. I depend upon them reading. My kids are all in college. And my kids will come home and say, Dad, do you have a book I can read? Absolutely. Their personal walk, lots of things here. Comfort journal, character journal, count your blessings journal, promises journal. When they're out from your house, you're going to be depending on some things. Well, you don't want those areas right there to be empty going into 18 and 19 years old. You want those areas to be developed. And you don't develop them then. You develop them now. Work through the teen years with them, okay? There's some other things there, some discussions that you can have with them, some reminders. Idle time for teenagers spells trouble. The older they get, there's some matters of wisdom. There's some suggestions. Not all of what I'm giving is straight from the Bible, okay? Some of it is things that I've observed. Some of it is just wisdom, I believe. Some of it's Bible principle. But hopefully, this gives you some fodder. We don't work on all this overnight, do we? So it's not like go home and, oh my word, there's no way. A little bit at a time. You talk with your husbands. Hey, what do you think about? And my wife would do that. You know, maybe we need to talk on this. Thanks, son. That's helpful. But it at least gives you some fodder to work with. Hey, this is where we want to be 8-10 years from now. This is where we want our kids to be. We've got to be working on some things right now.